she said, oh, Jesus, oh, Jesus, oh, Jesus. Well, that's all. Mm. I had the glasses falling down.
6 bullets. That's what it took to silence 63-year-old KwaZulu-Natal grandmother and anti-mine activist Fikile Nchangase. Her crime? Standing firm in opposition to the expansion of a coal mine in her community. In today's episode of Boots on the Ground, behind SA's national headlines, we look into the assassination of Umama Nchangase, an anti-mine activist from Northern KwaZulu-Natal, and we consider the environment of intimidation that she and other vocal activists find themselves in. Boots on the Ground is a podcast dedicated to unraveling some of South Africa's biggest news stories. This podcast follows Sunday Times reporters as they investigate the stories making the headlines. For Boots on the Ground, behind SA's national headlines, I am your host, Matthew Savides.
Please be advised that the content of this podcast involves descriptions of murder and may be disturbing to some listeners. Listener discretion is advised.
How do you remember Mama Nchangase?
She was not a gossiper. She was working with people in the front.
Mm.
In the front line, yes.
Mm.
She loved to work with people with honest and to, we are just speaking the truth.
Mm.
She was not happy if seeing the people, some person victimizing someone.
The man you've just heard is Victor Langa, a close family friend and former colleague of Umama Nchangase, and the last person to hear her voice. They were chatting on the phone while Nchangase was chopping vegetables in her lounge. While they chatted, Langa played her a gospel song he just found. Fikile was a devout Christian. The song is upbeat and happy, and would soon become dreadfully out of place. All of a sudden, he hears a commotion on the other end of the line.
She said, oh, Jesus, oh, Jesus, oh, Jesus, well, that's all.
Mm.
I had the glasses falling down.
So did you hear any of the bullets, any of the gunshots when she was shot?
Only one. I suspected that it is a thunderstorm.
Mm.
Later, I also said to my wife, if it's not Izzy Gebengu, it's a thunderstorm.
If it's not?
Izzy Gebengu, robots.
Yeah.
It can be a robots or a thunderstorm. Something is happening at Kwaqhakaza. If I'm not mistaken, it was from 6:30 to 20 to 7.
He would later find out that 3 armed men had entered Fikile's home while they were chatting. They walked in, spoke to her grandson, and asked him to watch the dogs so they could say hello to his grandmother, who ran a small tuck shop from her home. But they were not there to say hello. Nchangase was gunned down in cold blood, 6 bullets ripping through her chest, shoulders, and abdomen. One shot was fired while she lay face up on the floor of her Zomkele home. One bullet hole still remained in the floor when the Sunday Times visited the family in the wake of the killing, marking the exact spot the fatal shot was fired. Nchangase's daughter, Lungelo Khakaza, says it was her son who sounded the alarm.
It was around about 7:30, and they told me that my mom was found dead after hearing gunshots, because my son, who was in the house, heard the gunshot and went to the neighbor's house, who alerted everyone arrange transport for me to come here. So I arrived here at about 8. And the police and my neighbors were here.
So it was three guys. They came in, they spoke to your son, and they told him, look, if you and the boys can just watch the dogs, you're going to go greet your grandma.
Yes.
But they did.
Yes.
This is not the first parent that Kakaza has lost this year. Her father passed away just 3 months earlier to cancer, and now her mother has been gunned down. But who was Fikile Nshangase? And what could a 63-year-old grandmother have done to deserve this kind of targeted violence? While their issue is complicated and involved, the answer is simple. Fikile Nshangase simply wouldn't back down. She was at the forefront of the Umfolozi Community Environmental Justice Organization, a community organization opposed to the proposed 220-kilometer expansion of the existing Somkhele mine in northern KwaZulu-Natal. The anthracite mine, which has been operating since 2007, is the subject of three court cases. In 2016, the mine, operated by Tendele Coal Mining, was granted authorization to expand their operation. One of the trio of legal matters seeks to overturn that 2016 expansion approval. As the Sunday Times started probing the matter, shocking allegations of bribery quickly came to light. Nshangase's assassination came after she rejected an alleged 350,000 rand bribe to back down on her opposition to the mine's expansion. Exactly 2 weeks to the day after she stood up at a public meeting and said she would depose an affidavit stating exactly who offered the bribe and exactly what they wanted, she was gunned down, raising inevitable questions as to whether she may have paid the ultimate price for her resistance. Kirsten Ewens, an environmental lawyer representing the community in their cases against the mine, says that Man Nshangase was bold, outspoken, and a force to be reckoned with. She said Fikile had told her about the bribe, and Ewens was at that meeting when Fikile made her statement.
I would say she was a feminist, which is rare in that rural Zulu setting, because it's hard to be a feminist.
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever met her husband. So she was the one that always came to the meeting. She was the one that sat in the front row. She was the one that stood up and said, "Hold on, you lied. You shouldn't have said that. I don't trust you." She was the one that called people out in public over and over and over again. She was the one that was always trying to push for her community to do better. So she wanted to harvest gooseberries and make gooseberry jam and sell it. She had an entrepreneur's spirit. Mm. She was also a perfectionist. So if you sang the song wrong, she would stop and we'd have to sing with him again, the song again, because you got the words wrong. Or So she spoke with justice and she spoke with truth, regardless of how hard it was. Incredibly outspoken, incredibly courageous, incredibly brave, and incredibly aware of what was right and wrong.
Johan Lorenzen, another lawyer involved in the cases, believes Nshangase's anti-mining stance was central to the hit.
She just carried space forcefully. When she was in the room and spoke, she was a magnet, both awful and also then understandable why she would be chosen.
Initially, 19 families were part of the court cases and are refusing to be moved to make way for the mine's expansion, although the lead applicant has since withdrawn. Fikile was not one of the 19, as she was not required to move her home. Her opposition was in principle and due to the negative impact of the mine in general. Both lawyers say that these families and other activists have experienced significant intimidation, including death threats, and overt violence, including drive-by shootings. It has gotten worse since lockdown, they say. While Mind Management denies knowing about this intimidation, it is a pervasive feeling that exists. There is a culture of fear among the community, particularly among the families that are refusing to move, and activists like Nshangase who support them.
I mean, I know it's legally and it's difficult to speculate around her killing, but does it seem to point towards it being linked to the mine and to her activism?
In terms of potential culpability for the mine, I'd say firstly, just from experience, the odds of the company itself, of the mining rights holder itself putting out a hit are very low. I mean, there's too many ways that could go wrong, and they're not going to risk, you know, white CEO's criminal liability for something like that. But what we have very much observed is creating a culture of intimidation of people standing up to the mine, because essentially there have been several, they're called management briefs, so basically public notices for the entire community in English, updating them on the mine and its health or otherwise, and several of them have specifically named activists as well as who have been participating in the court litigation, such as Sikile and Chagase.
Okay.
But both groups, the activists and the household that have not yet agreed to the terms of their relocation, have been specifically called out, and people have been told that the mine will shut down if they persist with their conduct and expressing hope that jobs, contracts, and share equity will disappear if that happens.
Okay.
So the stakes were put very high in a way that to an extent this would be linked to a mine contractor, a traditional counsel, or an employee, it would be very predictable.
For the last year, there's been a general feeling of intimidation, especially for these 19 families. Sikile was not one of those 19 families in Fiji.
Yes.
Yeah. So she has never been, in our mind, in the firing line, literally. We knew everybody that was vocal was in the firing line. But the 19 families have had death threats. Look, we were focused on protecting those 19 families.
Yeah.
You know, so our focus was not really Sikile. I don't think she expected it either.
Yeah.
So the general feeling of intimidation is it's way past that. So they have the premier, they have the municipality, they have the Ngonyama Trust Board, they have the king, they have Nduna, they have Nkosi, they have their own community, and now they have certain members of Nkejo all threatening them.
Yeah.
I mean, it's gone way past intimidation. I don't know how these people are actually surviving.
Yeah.
And the mind's answer to that is, let us mine, and then everything will be fine. That is the answer to the, how do we stop the violence? Let us mine, and then the violence will stop.
Almost a month later, and no one has been arrested in connection with Manshangase's brutal murder on October 22nd. And proving that the violence or intimidation within the community is linked to the mine's expansion is a daunting and turbulent task. But Ewens believes that the timing of the assassination cannot be a coincidence.
I've heard from Sikile. Sikile was offered a bribe.
Yes.
And she said in that meeting last Thursday that she was killed last Thursday,
yeah.
2 weeks ago, exactly. We were in a meeting, and she said she would attest to an affidavit.
Yeah.
She said who offered her a bribe and what they wanted from her.
Okay.
Yeah.
Her family said the same thing to us as well. That was,
yeah.
You know, she came home from that meeting and told them exactly what had happened. And even though she wasn't directly involved, I mean, that would put her in the sights of people who wanted the mine.
Yeah, I mean, had we, I mean, that community meeting that we were in 2 weeks ago, it was supposedly for the people that we trusted. So it took us so long to organize because we weren't sure who was being recruited by the mine to turn against the organization. So there was only 70 people there, and she was obviously one of them, and she was in the front row. And she said in that meeting, exactly as she always does, you know, outspoken, strong, very opinionated, always used to be irritated with the way certain males treated her because she was a woman. You know, she said, you know, I'm treated like this because I'm a woman. And then when the meeting was disrupted by two of the committee members and subcommittee members and some thugs, but she didn't say that in front of them. But somehow, I don't know. I just feel that why now? Why 1 week after that meeting, when she said she was going to, on affidavit, say exactly what's been going on?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's devastating because we were all there. And, you know, I mean, obviously we had to, since then we'd actually got the affidavit that we needed from the other people that said that, because I phoned them straight afterwards and the next day and said, after she was killed, I said, do you know that you said the same thing? Be very careful. Because I feel like you are next.
So do you get the feeling that people are still as committed to this fight, or are you worried that this beyond intimidation is going to reach a point where people just, you know, pack their bags and give up?
Cracking, I wouldn't blame them if they did. I really wouldn't. But it's almost as if, in some instances, the resolve becomes stronger.
Ewan says that while Nchangase's assassination and other acts of violence against anti-mine activists has without a doubt intimidated the community, they keep on fighting because the conditions under which they live are appalling.
And I suppose the scary part is when you look at other mines, when you've seen it at Kolobeni, we've seen it at some of the coal mines in Limpopo and Mpumalanga. It's not uncommon to see anti-mining activists targeted like this.
No, and I think what makes this one so much more tragic and so much more unique and so much more dramatic is that they are not just opposing a coal mine. They are actively fighting against a currently operating coal mine. So Kolobeni are living in fear and intimidation and they're fighting nonstop. They are still living on their land, harvesting their vegetables, breathing clean air, you know, harvesting food from the sea, whereas this community are suffering with pollution and degradation and blasting and noise. Over the whole area, it's a shadow that you can see. It's almost palpable. It's like my version of hell, that place. And they live there. All they can talk about is the jobs. So everything we say as a part of the community, everything they say, the answer is that we employ people. The fact that you are devastating the water resources, the people have nothing to drink that's not polluted. Their cattle are dying because they get lost in the mine, because they're eating plants covered in coal dust. You know, it's just the answer to all of this is that we're creating jobs. They drive people through that coal mine to get to the Shishimi and Falozi Games. What about those jobs? What about those tourists that have to drive through an open-cast coal mine to get to what is supposed to be one of South Africa's most pristine nature reserves, game reserves, that saved the white rhino from extinction. I mean, Prince Harry wrote in the guest book when he visited, it's unfortunate that the entrance to this pristine place is marred by a coal mine.
Tendele Chief Executive Jan de Pryor said that if the company did not obtain permission to expand, the mine would close within 2 years. He said he wasn't aware of any tensions nor of any allegations of bribery, and he said he hoped the perpetrators of Nshangase's murder would be swiftly brought to book. But, he said, the mine was crucial to the lives and livelihoods of the community. He told the Sunday Times via email that the closure of the mine would result in the loss of income directly and indirectly for 20,000 people in an area where, quote, unemployment is up to 90%. The community is naturally divided over this information. Does the community relegate itself to living among the noise and pollution that is associated with open cast mining? Or does it forfeit 20,000 potential jobs in the hopes of preserving some semblance of a quality of life in the area? For Ma Nshangase, it's a choice she will no longer have to make, although we know where she stood. For Boots on the Ground, behind SA's national headlines, a production of the Sunday Times and Multimedia Live, I am Matthew Savides. The audio for this podcast was collected by myself and colleague Oren Singh. Editing and sound design by Paige Muller. To read the series of articles published on this topic in the Sunday Times and on Sunday Times Daily, visit timeslive.co.za and search for Nshangase.